Batter Off. Hello, listeners. Welcome back to A Pod of Their Own. This is episode 84 of A Pod of Their Own. I am Allison McCaig, and I am joined by my co-host this week, Linda Surovich. Hello, Linda.
Hey, Allison.
We are also joined by two very special guests today. We really have a treat for you guys today. We have two board members from the International Women's Baseball Center on the show. The IWBC is an organization that's dedicated to protecting, preserving, and promoting all aspects of women's baseball. Dr. Kat Williams is here. She is the president of IWBC. She teaches women's sports history at Marshall University and has authored numerous books and articles on women in baseball. Hello, Kat. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for having me.
We also have Dr. Leslie Heafy on the show today. She is on the IWBC board. She is the VP at the Society for American Baseball Research and the author of many published works on Negro League history, one of the best authorities on that out there. So welcome to the show, Leslie. Good to have you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Let's start off with how you both got interested in baseball. Were you fans of baseball as kids, or did you come into it later in life? Leslie, we know that you're a Mets fan, and this is a Mets podcast, so that makes us especially happy to hear. How'd you both get into baseball?
Go ahead, Leslie. Okay. Being a Mets fan and all, you know.
So I did grow up in upstate New York, so that's how I come to be a Mets fan, but my dad was a huge baseball fan, aficionado, played in college. And so growing up, I just used to watch and listen. We listened a lot to baseball on the radio because dad was a huge Yankees fan. And so we used to go everywhere and he always had his radio. So always grew up listening, hearing, watching, the usual question I get asked is, then how did I end up being a Mets fan when dad was a Yankees fan? And the answer is very simple. Even as a little kid, I thought George Steinbrenner was evil. And I was like, I can't like that team because he just is an evil man. And so I didn't like the Yankees. I liked the Yankee players. I just didn't like him. And that also meant we could watch and listen to more baseball in our house because the Yankees and the Mets were on different. And so that was also a good thing. And I also hate to admit it now because, you know, growing up, you think one thing. And then when you're an adult, you learn things about people that you wish you didn't know. So growing up, I was a Dave Kingman fan.
Yeah.
So you get my point. But as a little kid, I just thought it was the coolest thing in the world because he could hit the most amazing home runs. So when I was really little, I didn't watch the games in their entirety. You know, I hate to, but dad would call me into the room every time Dave Kingman came up to hit. So I'd come in to see him. And most of the time he struck out, you know, but the biggest thrill for me and really was when he hit that ball up into the Houston Astrodome that got stuck mm-hmm. in the ceiling and never came yeah. down. Mm-hmm. And I'm a little kid and I'm like, where'd the ball go? Yeah. I didn't know where it went. And I didn't know that it got stuck in the ceiling at first. And so that's kind of, unlike Kat, I never really played. I mean, I played catch with my brothers and sisters and stuff, but I just like the history and I love to watch and I love to be around. And so I've been a fan for as long as I can remember, and that's how, because mom was not a sports fan. Well, she was not born in this country, so she didn't understand baseball at all. So it came from my dad.
Yeah, trying to explain baseball to someone who was not born in this country, I never realized the true, like, how difficult of a task that is until my first year of grad school. I went to grad school at Johns Hopkins, and so they had special student nights at Oriole Park, and so at Camden Yards, and so our very first game we went together as a cohort, one of my cohort mates is from Chile, and so she just had never seen a baseball game before. Well, and she was like, why are they standing on a hill? And I was like, oh, this is the level we're at now. Okay.
Yeah.
So in grad school, we had a friend of ours who was from India, and we took her to a game in Detroit because I went to grad school in Toledo. And so, to your point, we're sitting and a ball got hit into the outfield and she got all excited. And then every hit after that, she's like, is the ball coming here? We're like, no, that doesn't happen. It's not going to land in your lap. She's like, but I'm like, yeah, that'll probably never happen the entire rest of the game.
Oh, that's funny. Well, I grew up much like Leslie in that there was a baseball game on the radio pretty much my whole childhood. I grew up and am still a diehard Cincinnati Reds fan. For me, a kid, I grew up with a we were pretty poor growing up. And also I had an undiagnosed learning disability until I was in my 20s. And so baseball was this thing that I could do and I understood and I loved it. And so we listened to it and I played a lot. I was often more often than not the only girl playing in the street with neighbor boys. And it was a place where I was good. I was a good ball player and I played shortstop. And for just a short period of time, I wasn't that kid that was dumb and, had the wrong clothes and the wrong lunchbox and, all of that stuff. And so, baseball was a game that I dearly loved and still love. But it was also, it literally and figuratively saved my life. And so in terms of just being a fan, I have loved the game for as long as I can remember. I tell my students, we got our first television when the Cincinnati Reds went to the playoffs. And we got our first color television when they went back. And that's the God's honest truth. And today, every single day that the Reds play, I talk to my father on the phone and we commiserate over the fact that they suck. Baseball for me, and it was not just my dad, it was also my mother. I lost my mom about 3 years ago, and she had dementia, but there were a lot of things she couldn't remember. But I could ask her, Mom, who played second base for the Big Red Machine? Oh, Joel Morgan. Shortstop. Davey Concepcion and Tony Perez played first base. And, it was a big, big part of her life, too. So it's in my blood.
So, yeah, you sound a lot like us that, you grew up with baseball and, you put it perfectly that baseball's in your blood. Yeah. So tell us, what led you to becoming involved with the IWBC and tell us about your respective areas of the scholarship and how they serve you there.
Go ahead, Kat.
Okay. This is a story that I've told now a million times, but it's true. I had been a member of an associate member of the All-American Girls Professional Baseball League Players Association for quite some time, since 2003, and gotten to know several of those women. And we had talked about the fact that there's no home for women's baseball. There's no museum. There's no Hall of Fame. There's no place where the women who played, umpired, coached, tended the fields, designed the stadium. There's no place for them. And we got tired of waiting. So on February 22nd, 2014, we sat around in Seal Beach, California, over pizza and beer, and we created the International Women's Baseball Center. And our primary goal was the preservation and the preservation of the long history of girls and women in baseball, but internationally. And this is important because women's baseball internationally is huge. It is huge. And women have always been part of the game. They did not start playing baseball in 1943, and they did not end in 1954. As important as the All-Americans are to that timeline, that history, they are one tick on a very long timeline. And so we put our heads together, and by golly, here we are in 2021, and we have property in Rockford, Illinois. We're about to purchase some more. And, you know, we've done some pretty amazing things. And this was a group of people who sort of, you know, we'd never done this before. But we are dedicated to not only preserving that history and providing a home for girls and women in baseball, but also we're dedicated to using that history. Those girls that are right there on that picture with me, those are the girls. That's why we do this. And you can't put history under a glass case and in a acid-free folder and expect anybody to care about it. You got to bring it out of the shadows and use it and show those girls they stand on the shoulders of greatness, because they do. And that is our goal.
Leslie, how'd you become involved in the organization and join CAT?
A couple years after they got started, when Kat reached out to me and said, "Hey, we know you're busy, but do you want to join us?" And I was like, "Absolutely." I mean, that's literally what it was. I was like, "Sure, of course I do." And
yeah,
and been involved.
Now she's really busy.
But I mean, Kat hit it on the nose. It's for all of us. It's about the idea that we need to educate people to understand that the history of baseball involves women at every level from the very beginning. And that's here in the United States, internationally, but at all levels. And we're not newcomers to the game. We've been there from the very beginning. And that's what the International Women's Baseball Center does. And so for me, it was a no-brainer and I was happy to be invited to join and be a part of the group and help move this idea forward, which is to help find a place where women's baseball will live forever.
That's awesome. Tell us a little bit more about the work you do right now, since starting, and the work you do currently, and, you know, the events you guys have and things like that to help promote the cause.
Go ahead, Kat.
How much time do you have, Allison?
We have as much time as you are willing to give us.
And Leslie can add to this, because she literally serves on just about every committee we have. But we have hosted or co-hosted girls tournaments. In fact, we hosted the largest girls baseball tournament in the world at Rockford, Illinois, a couple of years ago. That was Baseball for All national tournament. We had around 400 girls were there playing baseball. We co-sponsor, along with Sabre, the only women in baseball conference in the world. This will be our third year coming up. Leslie is the chair of that. We do all kinds of events that are connected to, local. When I say local, I'm talking about Rockford now. That local history, that local sports history. IWBC has something that we call IWBC Reads, which is it's fairly new, but it's been quite successful. Where we basically have a book club. And so our goal, everything is centered around, I mean, obviously baseball, but it's centered around education. And so everything is about, you know, moving forward with this idea that girls have and women have always been there, but it's about educating people about what we've done in the past, but also what we can do in the future, and what sports in general and baseball in particular can do to help build strong leaders, to make really good, honest, hardworking people. That's what sports do. That's what men have always done, have always learned in sports. And that's what we want girls to have an opportunity to do. So whenever we get a chance, whether it's a tournament, an activity, a big anniversary, we wrap it up in women's baseball and put the education bow on it. And so I think it would, you know, it would be really hard to talk about one in particular event, although Leslie, you may have some examples that I don't.
Well, I was just going to add to it. I mean, you hit it on the nose. Our goal is always education. Our goal is to raise awareness, because awareness brings opportunities. And as I always say, you know, we want to go past the place where the new person is no longer an anomaly. They're no longer an exception, because when you can see women's participation as the norm and not an exception, then we have arrived. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. It's when they're an exception, you can always continue to be on the outside looking in. Mm-hmm. And so trying to raise the awareness. So in addition to what Kat said, you know, we also, you know, the women's conference and the tournaments, but we also have a podcast that we've been doing now for almost a year. We work with local events. We have sponsored a variety of other opportunities. We get involved. We have board members who speak on all kinds of occasions whenever anybody asks, because that is our goal, is to raise that level of awareness. Because, you know, it's just making people realize that women belong in the game of baseball and have been there, and they're not asking for permission.
Right.
Just trying to get people to say, oh, wow. Yeah. And for today's, you know, when we think about today and the future, it's to say, it's connecting. We've talked about the idea of connecting the past, present, and future, right?
Right.
It's a continuum. And it's not a, oh, we're suddenly in the, no, we've always been here. And if you don't know that, how do kids today go to their coach and say, but I'm not the first one. So you're not, you don't have to feel like you're breaking a barrier. There's plenty, and they need examples. You know, we all know the phrase, if you can see it, you can be it.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's part of, I think, all the things we do are about that aspect of, we need to show the girls of today and tomorrow and the young ladies and the women that they're not alone. They don't stand alone. They stand with a huge crowd, and they stand on the shoulders of giants.
Yep.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And even as Met fans, you know, Joan Payson was there from the beginning.
Thank you. Absolutely. Yeah.
And, you know, she's kind of forgotten.
Well, she's so unique because, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but...
No.
When you talk about women owners, she stands completely unique. You know why? She's the only female owner who never inherited team or was given it by a husband, blah, 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 right? She did it outright herself.
Yeah.
That makes her stand. And so she deserves a place in the history that she does not get.
Right.
And I've written a lot about her for that exact reason, because it's so unique.
Yeah.
Only other person who slightly qualifies is Effa Manley.
Yeah.
But even she, it was because of her husband that they accepted her at first. And then she blossomed. But Joan Payson stands pretty much alone in that respect.
You mean we can't put my Reds Marge Schott up there?
Sorry.
So do you
kidding. I'm kidding.
That was a joke.
Yes, it was.
It was a good one. It was a good one.
Yeah.
So do you think like Joan Payson and Effa Manley were like, did they pave the way for others or?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, when you look at Effa Manley, you have to understand there's just, she's a woman in the 1930s and 1940s entering a man's world, but also a world that was governed by race.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And she takes on a position that isn't just a ceremonial one, I'm just here to, you know. No, she was the force behind that, the Newark Eagles. She's She ends up, yes, her husband Abe is technically the secretary of the Negro Leagues, but she was actually the one doing all the work, and we have all the documentation to prove it. She used the Newark Eagles to show how you could be part of a community, how you could promote citizenship, understanding. I mean, she really established so much of a presence that very few have done. And then Joan Payson comes along, and here you have a woman who literally did not have to have her husband's permission, her husband's money, anybody else's say. She directed everyone to do what she wanted. It was her money. It was her team. It was, and those are important role models and also important historical lessons for when we're talking about education. These are the kind of stories that have to be told for people to understand that the typical way we look at both baseball history and then American history is incomplete without these stories.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Support for this episode comes from Locker Room, the app that's changing the way we talk sports. Locker Room is a sports fan's dream come true. It's a live audio platform that lets you connect with other fans, experts, and even the athletes themselves. Locker Room makes it easy to start your own conversations. Talk about the latest rumors, takes, news, and teams you care about most. Join massive watch parties for all of your friends to react together in real time as you celebrate a buzzer beater or suffer the agony of a crucial bricked free throw. And if you've got a bunch of supremely spicy takes you'd like to fire off, you're in luck. You can even record the conversations if you want and release them as a podcast. So it's time to start thinking about catchy titles. It's all totally free and available at the iOS App Store right now. So go download it today. Locker Room, changing the way we talk sports.
As we all know, the fight for representation of women in baseball is not just about playing on the field and, you know, as breaking those barriers, so to speak, because more and more women are breaking into Major League Baseball in a variety of previously male-dominated roles as columnists and beat writers, player agents, front office employees, you know, Kim Ng, we talked about her before we started recording, broadcasters and more, but women remain the overwhelming minority in all of these fields. And you're probably aware of the recent sexual misconduct scandals surrounding like Jared Porter, Mickey Callaway, and now FP Santangelo, broadcaster for the Washington Nationals. How can we create a more inclusive and welcoming environment in baseball for women that goes simply beyond just hiring more women? How can we actually change the culture?
Well, you know, Gosh, if I knew the answer to that, I'd be wealthy. We'd be building the IWBC Center next week. But you know, I think there's not a one answer, right? I mean, it is about hiring more women, but it's about making sure that we go all the way back. And those girls that want to play baseball in Little League, those girls that want to continue to play baseball and not softball, they get to do that. Those girls that want to, I don't really want to play, but I'd love to be an umpire. Okay, well, you go to umpire school. It has to start. You know, Leslie said it, if you can't see it, you can't be it. And you can't jump over all this early stuff and then start inserting women into Major League Baseball. Kim Ng is, I mean, that woman is phenomenal. She worked her tail off. She is smart. She is talented. And she should have been a GM a long time ago.
Yep.
But yes. She worked her rear end off to get there. And there are a lot of women who will now see, oh, wait, so my hard work isn't all for naught. So I don't, there's not one answer. And I mean, yeah, hiring more women, having more women in those roles and working with those teams. But it's also, it's got to be at the grassroots level. You know, we've got to be okay with girls playing baseball. What on earth is wrong with girls playing baseball? Trust me, I love softball. I played competitive fast pitch softball as a young adult. It's a fantastic game. It is not baseball. And if a girl wants to play baseball, then she darn well better get to play baseball. But we have this thing in our country where, oh, well, no, you're a girl, softball, you have to play softball. Well, why? Softball was created by men for men so they could play inside during Chicago winters. There is nothing soft about that ball. I've been hit in the forehead with that ball, and I'm telling you, it's not soft. And so, you know, it's about all of that, but it's also about a cultural change. It's about saying we're here, we've always been here, and here's how we know that. Here's our history. But it is also about demanding your place and demanding that, yeah, I can be a GM, I can be an umpire, I can keep the stats, I can be a trainer, I can be any number of things. And you know, I think it's just, it's multifaceted for sure, but visibility is a key. You have to see women in those positions.
And then to just piggyback on that, it's the visibility brings the education, and the education shows that this is not new. This is not something that you're letting us do. Right. It's not something that you have to feel like you've lost something. And I think sometimes it can help people when they think, oh, wait, this has been done before. So we don't have to feel like we're breaking ground. We're not going to take criticism. And so raising awareness that women's participation in baseball has been there from the beginning. And then to show, I mean, and this sounds like I'm saying we have to prove, and that's not what I mean. Some people may take it that way, but showing that women's participation has not only been there, but it has been impactful.
Right.
That it has made a difference, and that there are roles that they have played that are just as significant as anybody else's, I think is important. And that helps to change a culture. So it's about educating everybody and showing the men who are going to have that. Women aren't a threat. Women aren't going to take over. They just want to have the same opportunities, the same chances, the same, right? If they want to, great. And if they don't want to, great. But they should have that chance. And that, but I think to change the kind of culture you're talking about is, wow, if we could figure that out, we'd be, but
yeah.
But part of it is, the kind of things we're talking, it's not only bringing women into the picture, but showing that women have always been there. So
right.
It doesn't feel like quite the same challenge, if that makes sense, right? Mm-hmm. That this is not new. We're not saying you have to be the one. It's already been done.
Right.
And it's not a zero-sum game either.
Right.
No.
Exactly.
No.
The elevation of women is not to men's detriment.
Yeah.
Exactly. And I'd like to the second part of your question was about the sexual harassment or sexual violence, and that's a different thing. And one of the things I'd like to say about that is, and we're just talking about baseball now. I think you could say the same thing about football, basketball, hockey, whatever. But Major League Baseball has to stand up.
Yes.
There is zero tolerance. Zero tolerance. Not zero tolerance and I'm going to beat my chest, but then backward, you know, behind the scenes, I'm going to slap you on the back. No, none. And until Major League Baseball stands up and says, we will not tolerate that, that crap's going to keep happening. And the stronger we make girls and women, and the more self-possessed and the stronger they feel about their place in the game, the less that's going to happen. Because, you know, Major League Baseball has got to take that on.
Yep.
And I would say the same thing about the NFL, the NBA, mm-hmm. I mean, all of them.
Well, somebody has to take the lead. And if you're Major League Baseball, you claim that you're the leader. You want to control all the different aspects of the game. Mm-hmm. So take control. Step up your part.
Right. Yep.
Well, and like the Ken Burns documentary, like he mentioned that baseball has always reflected kind of the culture of the United States. It's America's pastime. So you kind of do get that kind of, you like, even around, you know, the United States right now, you're seeing more and more women speaking up and, you know, it's not becoming the norm that, you know, guys will be guys or whatever. So hopefully baseball can, you know, take that and take the next step too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mickey Callaway still has a job, listeners. It is May 11th. He was suspended on February 2nd. It is May 11th. That investigation, we have heard nothing. He still has a job. This is your weekly reminder on this podcast. Yep. Mickey Callaway still has a job.
Yeah. Well, it's inexcusable.
That's where Major League Baseball has failed. Right. And it says, if you want to be the leader and you want to be who you say you are, then these are the kinds of things, tough decisions you have to make. And they shouldn't be tough. It should be a very easy, simple answer. No, this is not acceptable.
Well, and I think that goes also to what you're saying is visibility helps, and then that helps build stronger girls. So do you think we'll ever see a woman break through Major League Baseball as a player?
Well, you know, I have a couple of ways of answering that. First of all, my sort of snarky comment would be, who cares? because I don't care. I really do not care. I am not, this is my life's work. And I am not spending my entire life making sure that this history is preserved and that girls and women can learn from it and that build on it so that one woman can stand out there on a Major League Baseball field. That diminishes it all. That to me is too small. We are bigger than that. We are better than that. If a woman is good enough to play Major League Baseball, which the only way that's ever going to happen is maybe a junk ball pitcher. We are not as strong. We're not as fast. We're not as powerful. But if she is strong enough and she is good enough to play, then she darn well better get a chance to try. But honestly, I could not care less if there's a woman in Major League Baseball. I think there should be a women's professional baseball league, period.
Yes.
Period. We cannot compete with men. We can't. I mean, I played, God help me, only one season, but I played co-ed softball one season and nearly got killed about three times. I mean, there is no way that girls and women can compete with men. I'm not talking about little girls. I mean, I'm not talking about kids. So, you know, part of me is like, yeah, I don't really care. But I will be the first one there celebrating if there is a woman out there on the pitcher's mound, if there's a you know, whatever. But what I will say is there is absolutely no excuse for there not being female umpires in Major League Baseball.
Yes.
None.
Right.
None.
And so just to jump on what Kat said, I would agree wholeheartedly. It's not, because again, should a woman be allowed be in Major League Baseball? Absolutely. If there's somebody that's about opportunity, right? That's saying you have the same chance as anybody else. But the real issue is why is there not a league? Right. Why are women not given this? And this would, and that goes back to the whole sort of zero sum game, right? We're not trying to take away from, we're just simply asking for the same opportunities. And if basketball and others can do it, then why can't, after all, we still claim baseball as our national pastime.
Right.
Yeah.
Even, yeah. I mean, in, yes, people can claim all they want about football's viewership and things. But even with that being said, baseball is still recognized as, and so there's a really interesting statement that's being made. What are you saying about our country and our culture when you say this is the national pastime and there are people who are excluded from it? You are saying something about the larger American society, and that is not acceptable. And so the idea of creating women's baseball leagues at all levels is absolutely what is necessary. And that doesn't preclude a woman making the major leagues. It just says that's not the be all and end all. Because again, that's the exception. And as long as we're an exception,
you
can keep people out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. People love to talk about an exception. When we're no longer an exception, comes the norm. And then you don't have to work it to prove that you deserve a chance. And so for me, it's all about no longer being the exception.
Right.
Yeah.
And I absolutely refuse to call baseball America's game, because it cannot be America's game when 50% of Americans can't play it.
Yeah.
Yep. Or participate in any other way.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
Well, I never even thought about umpires, and you know, that was such a great point, because they are behind. There have been female referees in basketball and in football.
Yeah. Yeah. And what's the problem? You got to have eyes. You got to know the game. You know, this is not hard. One of the members of our board is Perry Barber. Perry Barber has been an umpire for what, Leslie, 40 years?
Over 40 years.
Wow.
And she is instrumental in getting women, any way she can, getting women to become umpires, whether it's Little League or she gets the umpires for the girls' tournaments that we sponsor. We try to get as many female umpires as possible. And this is her life's work. You know, where are the women? Where are they? Why is this not happening? There is only one reason, and that's sexism.
Absolutely. Because it's like, wait, they can't know the rules just like you can? Of course they can. Right. Of course they can. And they can call the game as well as anybody else. There's no, it's not a gender thing.
No.
At all. It's just a matter of, do you love the game? Do you understand it? Have you put in the work? And if you've done all those things, then, and if you can put a female referee out on the football field, then they can get tackled. They can, so all of that, all the excuses go out the window.
Right.
And they've been around, and then basketball even has had female referee even longer.
Yeah. So
there's no excuse. At all,
except
the idea that baseball is a masculine. It's like, oh my goodness gracious, no, it's not.
Yeah.
Given how terrible the umpiring has been in Major League Baseball this year, I think we can use a new crop of umpires. We can use a fresh set of eyes on that field.
Absolutely. You know, I was watching a game the other day, and the second baseman guy was running from first to second. The ball was hit to the second baseman, and he reached in the general direction of the runner. They showed this on replay 10 times. He was 3 feet away from the runner, and the guy called him out. And I'm like, I mean, I don't know. I wear glasses, and I think maybe I could do a better job.
Exactly. I think about the barriers or the challenges that remain when we think about trying to get a women's professional baseball league akin to the WNBA in basketball, for example.
Yeah.
I think about, because my other great love in addition to baseball is soccer, and that's the sport I grew up playing. And like I was, you know, and, you know, I was a really damn good soccer player and I played co-ed soccer until I was like 16. And so 15, maybe. And so I think about how, like, how successful the U.S. women have been on the international stage and how much they've drawn and their current challenges trying to get paid the same as men. But then the NWSL struggles to stay afloat. And I wonder, I just wonder, like, what lessons baseball, as we try to keep forming a women's professional baseball league, as we keep struggling to get that to, you know, be a viable thing, like, if the soccer players struggle to do it, what can we learn from them as we try to get a viable women's league?
Well, you know, I hate to say it, but I think, and I don't mean this in, so please don't take this the wrong way, the creation of softball was actually baseball's worst nightmare.
It has
become the be all and the answer to saying, well, there's the, it becomes the excuse, well, they can play softball, there's the,
right,
like, no, that's not, you're missing the point. But softball became in the 1930s and 40s when they made that decision, right? And it has been challenged and it's been upheld and challenged again. And that softball is the alternative and it's seen as an equipment. And it's like, no, I'm sorry, you're misunderstanding. Softball is a wonderful sport, but you cannot use it as the excuse. Right. And that's what we continue to do. Yeah. And it's like, no, I'm sorry. Baseball is a very different game. The similarity is there's a ball and there's a bat and there's four bases. Yeah. And then the similarity ends there. Right. And so as long as we continue to use softball as the excuse and allow people to use that, that's where, and so then the history wins out, which is baseball was a masculine game. And when you look back in the 19th century, that's how it was portrayed, right? It was, and it was represented as this bastion of masculine, and it's like, no, nah. And so that's what, and no other sport ever has that history. They just don't. And because baseball was our first, and so baseball captures that idea, and consequently we constantly run a, and softball becomes the scapegoat, the excuse, right, every single time,
right?
And then people have to feel like you're, oh, I don't mean to down, and we're not downgrading softball because it's a totally, it's not, it shouldn't even be in the same conversation, right?
Right.
Because it's not, we're talking about two different games.
Well, and you know, to add to what Leslie's saying too, and first of all, let me just say, there is no bigger proponent of Title IX on the planet than me. But I think Title IX also added to this idea of softball as a quote equivalency sport. You know, well, we got the men's baseball, so we'll have women's softball. And, you know, this is it. And so it's difficult because, you know, I get that a lot of schools don't have a lot of money. Right. I mean, you know, we're not talking about Alabama football here. Right. I mean, with that kind of money. So we're talking about being able to offer sports on an equal basis, but it is absolutely unreasonable to create a quote equivalency sport when you don't need one.
Right.
Well, you know, we're not talking about mud wrestling, right? You know, we're talking about baseball and women can play baseball.
Well, so Kat, to your point about Title IX, in some ways, that is the most recent culprit, right?
Because
Title IX was created with this weird condition and schools at every level could choose how they met the Title IX qualification.
Yeah, right.
And of course they all chose the hardest one.
That's right. Yeah.
The hardest one is of course that you're supposed to have equal number of sports, right?
Right.
Which allowed them to say, okay, women are the culprit. We have to give up this sport in order to.
Right.
So it created artificially.
Right.
And us against them.
Yeah.
Title IX has four different ways you can meet their expectations. And the actual least one that you should worry about, the hardest one, is the equal number of sports. And yet that's what almost every school chooses. Why?
Right.
Not because they have to. but because they want to. Mm-hmm. They want to create this us against them. So mm-hmm. when the wrestling team gets eliminated, they can say, it's yep. not our fault. Hmm. It's the women's fault. And right. so it creates this artificial continued competition, and women mm-hmm. become the scapegoat.
Right.
And you know, with scapegoat, if you can eliminate them, then all is good. And so, unfortunately, most people interpret Title IX that way, and that's actually not the way Title IX works at all. And right. Title IX could be a huge benefit, but they have chosen, most schools from the high school on up have chosen to make it the enemy so that they can create this artificial sense of competition.
Yeah.
Yeah. That happened at my school. I went to University of Delaware for undergrad. When I was there, the men's track team got delegated to club status, and as did the right. men's ice hockey team. And Title IX was blamed for right. that.
Yeah, that happened yeah. at Marshall as well.
And that's
yeah.
not accurate. It's just not.
Yeah. True. Yeah.
But nobody knows the actual rules.
Right.
So they don't know how to. And it's like, no, that's not the way it works.
Yeah. So we can't help but take a moment on the podcast to ask Leslie how she feels about the Mets this year. as a Mets podcast, we have to have some Mets content in there. So.
Excited, frustrated, as all Mets fans are.
Yeah.
Because here's the thing. Every time we think we have all the pieces together, something happens.
Yep.
And yep.
You can't build the Mets team currently without DeGrom.
No.
And the most recent, it appears that he's going to be okay. But even him missing a start is like, oh. And I don't know, the biggest issue with the Mets right now is they, as always, they look good on paper and then the reality sets in. The reality is right now, they can't hit.
Like, no. They are losing 1-0.
And there's no excuse for that. Because I know, I was just looking, sorry, I was looking at my phone because I was checking Stroman's And you're like, wait a second. How many years now, as true Mets fans, can we say that almost every, even if you don't believe them, you know, you listen to them because we live in eternal hope, right? Every prognosticator, sorry, says, oh, the Mets have the best pitching staff in Major League Baseball. The Mets have the best pitching staff. The Mets, and then they get hurt, and then they get traded, and then they get hurt, and then they get. And so that's, you know, and once again, we had, and maybe we will come June when Syndergaard comes back, hopefully, and Carrasco.
Carrasco, maybe.
Yeah. But Syndergaard's a maybe too, because, you know, Tommy John surgery is an iffy thing. Some come back way better than before. And I still think, you know, until proven otherwise, our current strength of the team is, and the heart of the team is DeGrom. Yes. And if he's not there, so hopefully this is, the current is just what they say it is. It's a short, let's give him a rest. Let's get him back 100%. And because even when he was hurt on his last start, he still pitched 5 innings and struck out 6 people. So
yep.
That's hard to argue with, but the encouraging thing right now is Lindor finally seems to maybe.
He looks like himself finally, hopefully.
Yeah.
And maybe it's, I don't know how many, because we've all seen how many players come to New York, even with the Mets, not the Yankees, and struggle under the spotlight of the, and, you know, Lindor has never experienced that. And so maybe that's part of the reason why he hasn't really. So hopefully he looks like, maybe he looks happy, and that's for Lindor, that's the key, right? He's always that. I mean, and he and McNeil finally seem to have worked out whatever their difference, the raccoon otherwise, you know,
so. Rats, so raccoons, who knows.
Possum.
Who can say?
Rats, raccoons, and Donnie, we've got a whole weird, but if it works, we're okay with that, because that isn't that sort of the way the Mets play.
Yes.
It's their contrast to the Yankees. The Yankees are the straight-laced, you know.
Yeah.
The Mets have always been a little odd and a little weird. And so
I like to call it having personality.
I agree.
Yes, for sure.
You know, you go back to the from 62 onward, we've got lots of personality in the Mets history. So we're hopeful. But isn't that's the fun of baseball. You're always hopeful.
Yes. Yes.
You got to believe.
Ah! That was very good.
Well, now we've gotten the Mets out of our system. How can our listeners support the work of the IWBC?
Well, get out your checkbook, add a whole lot of zeros. No, we certainly have a number of ways to donate. You can go to our website, internationalwomensbaseballcenter.org. We also sell a lot of merchandise. We own a small company called Sport Makeup, and they have an Etsy site. We have a lot of that kind of stuff, but pay attention to a capital campaign we're going to be unleashing before too long. We have started using hashtag a place of their own. And so we really want people to be involved, become a member of the IWBC, join us in this movement. And that's what it is. It's a movement. And if folks are interested in volunteering, they can certainly reach out to us on the website. You know, Leslie and I are only two of the really hardworking individuals who make up our board, but we have an army of volunteers and we rely on all of them. And so we would like to first and foremost invite everyone to join us.
Yeah, absolutely. And that it's about time and money. Everybody thinks first money, and that's great. Yes, we won't say no to any of that, but it's also time. Because, you know, raising awareness is all about that. And so I would just encourage people, if they have any interest at all in getting involved, even in the smallest way, or even just reach out. We send us an email, go on our Facebook page, send us a message. Go on Instagram, send us a message and say, hey, I'd like to get involved, and we will find a place for you.
Yep, always.
We will absolutely link the website in the show notes, as well as the tweets, and we tweet out this episode tomorrow morning. So be on the lookout for that, everybody. But we will close the show this week, like we do every week, with walk-off wins, where each of us talks about something that is making us happy this week, baseball-related or otherwise. Kat, what is your walk-off win?
Well, Wade Miley of my Cincinnati Reds pitched a no-hitter on Friday night.
Oh, my goodness!
Yes, he did, and that is the 17th no-hitter in the Reds' history. And this was a guy that, you know, most people don't know. So it was pretty cool. And I know that was last week, but I'm going with it.
That absolutely works. I mean, that's 16 more no hitters than we have in our history.
Yes, I know. That's why I was like, oh, God.
Well, you know, one of our no hitters was from somebody who was your guy. And
I know. Yes, I know.
Yeah.
Leslie, what is your walk-off win?
Well, so mine's not baseball related this week, because it just feels like it's the last week of our semester at school. Oh. And I have to give a shout out to all our students who are graduating, because it's just a massive achievement for all of them. In any year, it's a massive achievement. But given the crazy year and a half we've just had, I just applaud every single one of them, and I'm so happy for all. And graduation is Friday, and so I'm very excited to see them all and be able to celebrate with all of them, because I just think it's been hard on us, but we don't realize how hard it's been on them.
Yeah, definitely. I was telling Kat before we started recording that my boyfriend's a school teacher, and so he's definitely looking forward to, you know, seeing his kids, his seniors, he teaches high school seniors, seeing them graduate, and, you know, this year of virtual learning being over.
Yeah,
it's such a, I can't say how much I applaud them for how they have persevered.
Yeah, definitely. Hat tips to all the students and all the teachers out there, because it's been a tough year for everyone. Linda, what is your walk-off win for this week?
My walk-off win was I finally made it to Citi Field for the first time since September of 2019 for a game on Saturday.
Nice.
And they won. I mean, I didn't have much hope going in since they were using Tommy Hunter as an opener. So the game turned out a lot better than I thought it was going to be. But you know what? It didn't matter. Just seeing Citi Field again, taking in the sights, the sounds. Like, Allison, we talked about this. Like, just, you know, really stopping to appreciate it. It was, you know, I probably had the biggest smile on my face that you couldn't see underneath the mask, but it was perfect. I got the new polar bear burger, which was delicious. Wow. And, it was just, you know, I was back in my element. It was like, you know, being in your home away from home, and, and I'm already planning for when I can go back. So that's my walk-off win, is going home, basically.
Yes, absolutely. I have tickets for May 30th, and I am counting down the days.
Oh, that's awesome. Good for you.
I'm counting down the days. I haven't been to a game since July 2019.
Too long.
Way too long. And I mean, yeah. I live in, as folks know, I live in Washington, D.C., so I'm even further from the Mets than most people. So it's like an event for me to even get there in the first place. So I cannot wait. So my walk-off win is Mets-related this week. I just want to shout out the bullpen. Because they've been, the Mets bullpen pitched to, I think it was a 1.54 ERA this week, lowest in the major leagues. The Mets bullpen has been incredibly good, and they have made us all eat crow, because I think on Amazing Avenue, when we wrote up like things we were most concerned about and things we were most excited about going into the season, I think we all universally said that the bullpen was the thing we were most concerned about.
We did.
And it has been the area of least concern.
Because we were supposed to be.
Exactly. It was the right thing to be concerned about. But it has been the area of least concern, as it turns out, because they've been rock solid from the top down. From Edwin Diaz has been lights out. Trevor May has been lights out. J. Reese Familia looks like 2016 J. Reese Familia, and it's incredible to watch. And Tommy Hunter giving them two scoreless innings and then turning around the very next day and opening and giving two hitless innings. Just incredible. Sean Reed Foley comes out of absolutely nowhere and like looks like Craig Kimbrell, like hawking on the mound, like incredible stuff. The bullpen has been lights out, and Miguel Castro, shout out to Miguel Castro. He's been such a pleasant surprise this year. Just the bullpen, and I'd like to give him a shout, because they've been great. I mean, who knows if it will continue. It might swing the other direction, but if it does, I hope that by the time it does, the bats will pick up a little more and it'll matter less. So I just want to shout out the Mets bullpen. Without them pitching absolutely out of their minds, the Mets would not be even remotely where they are. So because of the lack of hitting. So my walk-off win for this week is dedicated to the Mets bullpen. Thank you, Mets bullpen. You've been great. you know, if you're ignoring the Mets right now, which, you know, I wouldn't blame you, because John Means shutting them out, but it's John Means. He's one of the best pitchers in baseball. You know, you can go to amazingavenue.com, check out all of our fantastic content. We've got game recaps, we've got everything for you. This podcast, all of our podcasts. You can follow us on all of the social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, @AmazingAvenue. And you can rate and review the show, subscribe on your favorite podcast app of choice. It really helps people find the show. You can email us too, aa.apodoftheirown@gmail.com. You should check out IWBC. We will link their website in the show notes, as I mentioned, and in the tweets. The original intro and outro music to this podcast is by Bunga. Let's go Mets. And don't forget, there is no crying in podcasting.